and change in a particular incident. That is, they are changing the structure of what is in fact a power structure by their presence and their activity as well. I'll come to you in a minute, but there was somebody back, unless this was immediately on this.
Yeah, it was just an immediate comment. It's
right.
Because the system is defining their status as minority. The system creates room within itself to place these four women or whoever.
Well, first it places them as tokens, but then it places them as a minority which it knows how to deal with better and a more human fashion. And after a while, maybe they'll be seen as normal.
But the system totally controls them and their movement and the potential they have to have an impact.
I don't think so. Not after a while.
You're insisting that we adhere to your construct, and your construct is a construct that adheres to the construct of the society. So, I mean, I guess what I'm going to ask you to, what I would like to see in this room is for people to be sharing ideas about power and not necessarily addressing them.
Okay. Let's.
I just wanted to make another comment. Though you're a queen bee, you remain a bee, and the other people are not bees. And I've been a queen bee, so I know I'm a bee.
Yeah, my assumption of what you're saying is that you hold out that perhaps there will then be transformation amongst the governors. And I don't know whether we have historical reason or even contemporary reason to believe that that is so. I'd like to point to the Italian feminists. And the Italian feminism began within the party structure, the traditional party structures. The men were not taking on women's process. The women were either to adjust to their process or leave, and they chose to leave. And that then moved women towards separatism. And I'm wondering whether, ultimately, our only success will be separatist success, or whether, in fact, we will eventually be able to transform. I have not seen signs for that.
I think it's a major question, and I think that indeed you certainly have, historically speaking, records of a decision as well as an enforcement of moving towards separatism. For instance, a little more historical than that, but the situation of English feminists during the 19th century was very much that they had to remove themselves from attempting to do anything in any structures, that you got separate girls' schools and separate colleges, and you had a whole process in which women did necessarily undertake an exploration of the situation of their selfhood by themselves. I think it's entirely possible that we will have to do that. But I don't think we can lay out, and I didn't mean to, and I'm sorry if I did, it was because I was trying to go fast, that there is any one right way to do this or any one solution. I do think that these are the three powers that we can use, and we may have to use them in different situations in different ways.
On the same subject, I think the problem that we've had historically has been that when the presence of women begins to make an impact, men separate out. And my example is that women have been the censors of society, and to a point, men have, before making their dirty joke, before smoking, turned to the woman for permission. When that becomes oppressive, the men have gone to their men's clubs, to their men's dining rooms, and they have separated into their male structures. Now, the problem that we seem to be facing is there are many places, despite laws of equal access, that men can go in the technological sphere into their own separate spaces and totally ignore what it is that women have to say, so that it feels that the construct of the consent of the governed is unworkable as long as men have the power to move on and up and to move into separate spheres. And women still don't have that power. We don't have the spaces, we don't have the technology, we don't have the money. So that our growth seems so bound and so limited.
What are the spheres, the separate spheres in which men are totally alone?
Well, at this point,
which are important ones. I don't mean having a club where you smoke.
Well, academic institutions, even the academic institutions that are pro-women or for women, are very much governed by men.
That's true, but they are not separate.
they are not separated, but they have the possibility of becoming separated. Each one of these areas right now, I think that if women are involved in the corporation, if women are involved in academia in any area, it's because women have not yet become so much of a problem that men need to separate out. Men become separatists when women get in the way.
Well, I don't think we want to be paranoid about it. I think that there certainly there are great tendencies toward this as being an instinctive, no, I don't believe in
male bonding kind of thing.
A quick male reaction. But I don't think it's the only reaction. I do think that there are common human interests and that some men are intelligent enough to perceive them and to want women's talent and energy and intelligence enough to accept some bargaining relationships. I think we can bargain more in different places and harder than we have. Right now, Johnny, I don't know who here and here. Philippa, I skipped you before. You go. Excuse me.
This isn't really what I want to say. Just to pick up on your point. There was a case a couple of years ago in New York City where the law firm of Sullivan and Cromwell, which is one of the most powerful law firms in the country, had started to let a couple of young women in because they were under all kinds of pressure. And one young woman lawyer employee had to sue to get Sullivan and Cromwell to agree that not only would they go on recruiting, hiring, and paying women from the law schools on the same basis as the men, but that they would cease having all of the firm's social functions in clubs from which women were prevented going. So, you know, to some extent that does happen, although I agree with you, once there are enough women there, they change the system. But what I really wanted to say was I throw out two thoughts, because I've been dealing with the concept of power in my work as a political scientist. And one of the things that made me start rethinking power was female groups, of which I am a member, and in which I discovered that everybody tried to stay away from power, that the groups had no focus, they had no nucleus, they had no center, because as soon as a woman became sufficiently assertive to give the woman a center, she thought, oh my goodness, I'm grabbing for power, and she retreated like mad. And I thought that really picked up on a theme that runs throughout Western politics, which is that power is a relationship between two people, but one of them is superior and the other is inferior. And if we would substitute, I mean, since in the linguistic style that we've been using this afternoon, if we would substitute for power the word leadership, I think we might begin seeing our way clear to something new, because leadership is also a relationship between two people. But it means that the leader is being followed because the leader is answering needs of the follower, and once the leader stops answering the needs of the follower will stop following, will no longer be a follower. And it's certainly something we could use in American politics, but I think within women's groups, this is an idea as well, that there is nothing wrong with exercising leadership as long as it is accountable in the sense of meeting the needs of the other people in the group, that itself is not bad. And my second thought related to that is that it does seem to me that at this moment in American history, the only group that can be perceived as being anywhere on the left of the political spectrum that has the power to the coherence to organize effectively, this moment is women. If you look at what's going on in American politics, there is no other organized group on the left. And so the idea of politics as being a male domain, yes, of course it's dominated by men, but as one that has to go on being dominated by men, I think is wrong. And the women's movement is proving it to be wrong. But I don't think the women's movement needs to become powerful in the male sense while it's doing it. It can become a matter of leadership, a political movement in which leadership is exercised. I think maybe we should start rethinking in those terms.
Well, I don't mind whether we call it leaders and followers or rulers and ruled, but I think that the ability of the followers to communicate their needs to, if you want to call them leaders, and make it stick, will be effectuated by using the powers of the weak. Otherwise, I think you're going to have the kind of leadership that James McGregor Burns describes in his book, which is a symbol, which is a synonym for pedagogy. You have a transforming leader who tells, who sets the goals for his followers, it's naturally he, and who raises them to their true worth and, you know, gets them off the ground, and all the energy comes out of him. That is what I think we want to be careful not to imagine as being a proper way of using power. He falls into it very fast. I'm sure that you don't intend to, but I think the effectiveness of the relationship remains in the hands of what is, yes, a dyadic relationship as of, and I think has to be as of now. Now, I don't know that it will be in that future which we may be able to invent. One of the things that we need to invent is a way not to polarize. We have been polarized on the basis of the division of labor by sex for as long as anybody remembers. And the contest in the middle has preempted our sense of the unity of humankind around it. Once we can begin to play down the inevitable necessity of conflict and of solving problems by coming to decisions, by debating and disputing them, we will be able to get more variety into a group. I do start where we are. So now,
I find a conflict in what you're saying between the question you asked, something about it would seem that most reasonable men would want women and would be willing to bargain with them. And my question is sort of why? Because what that's in conflict with is the notion that men are in power and patriarchy exists because men don't want to give up power. And your answer about that seemed to be open and women can rise. But we're talking about a society, and that's the basic conflict. Why would they want to give up power?
Well, and once I have the external world, A, some of them are sick of power, they're terrified. B, not all men are the same. Let us not homogenize
men.
But
we're talking about the men who are in control of power now, and we're saying something about how can we change this? And to say there are a few men who are different doesn't really address yourself to that conflict and what you're presenting.
I'm sorry, I think it does. Let me say this. I said at the beginning that if the reality of power were total dominance and total submission, we would be living in the condition of 1984 forever and a day in New York. If we had nothing but a patriarchal structure in which all men not only aspired to power but adored it when they got it and beat us over the head in order to enforce their wishes, I would agree with you, but that isn't, look at the world. It's not good, but it isn't that bad. And I think we have to explain why it isn't.
Why it isn't that bad?
Yes.
I don't understand. It seems that women are having a very hard time getting some power in this society. And the conflict they're up against is something very large. And you seem
but
to
you would, we are not having as much of a bad time as some women in other extreme conditions of patriarchy, where you cannot go out without a veil over your face, where you cannot look at a stranger.
I don't understand what the point of the comparison. I'm not trying to polarize either and say we're as bad off as. I'm saying in this society, it is very difficult for women to get ahead because it is a patriarchal society, as you've said yourself, and because men are not particularly interested in giving up power. And it seems that that is something that you presented. That's what patriarchy means, that the men are in control. And on the other hand, you seem to be surprised or think it was extreme for a woman, for the women who mentioned something about the separatist nature of men and that men are in control in places where women can't go. And it's true for industry on the whole, and it's true in religion, and those are places that men are making the rules and there aren't any women allowed.
When you started to make your point, you spoke a good deal more extremely than you did when you finished. Perhaps I spoke more extremely than I meant to. I certainly do not dispute the need and the value of separatist understanding in which women go off to investigate their situation, share it with each other, and discover new ways to reach new purposes. On the other hand, what I was trying to say was that there already exists in the world as it is a situation which is not as extreme as it would be if there were nothing but patriarchal domination. We are not in a good situation, and patriarchy exists, but something else exists which works to limit it. And I don't want to believe that it is simply the ethics and the morals of our noble leaders. To me, it seems to be the fact that we who are the weaker member of a relationship still have sufficient power to modify the relationship by what we do.
Do you suggest we do that within the patriarchal structure? There's some kind of assumption there, and I think that's maybe what a few people are responding to.
I think if we're going to do it at all, we start within the patriarchal structure because that's what's there, don't we? I don't say we're going to end. I particularly didn't want to say where I thought we would go. I think that wherever we wanted to go, we were going to have to use, it seemed to me, the powers that were naturally ours and equally available to us. The powers to get
here.
Yes. Now, I don't know what to do about this. Does anybody, I still like the bakery. First, who's next?
I'd like to address a couple of points that have been made already. One of them has to do with what Luke said about leadership. I don't think that by exchanging the word leadership for power, we're going to accomplish anything. And I'd like to share with you a study that I did on leadership between men and women in a task that involved forcing either member of the dyad, two people together. First we paired male and female, and then female and female. Same woman in two situations, okay? And in the situation, the couple, the pair, who didn't know each other, were forced to decide who was going to be the leader in a particular task. What we found was that the women were far less likely to assume leadership in the cross-sex pair than when they were paired with other women. And this was despite the fact that they were equally likely to make the decision. The usual decision-making conversation started like this. Either the man or the woman saying, "What would you like to do?" And either the man or the woman deciding, and equally likely in both cases, that the man should be the leader. Okay, so the women had equal access to the leadership opportunities, but they gave them away. It was an interview situation in which they were going to decide who was a guilty party of two suspects.
It was not a test that called for specific
male. No, it didn't. It didn't call for specific male or female abilities. It was an interview. They had to decide who was guilty of a suspected theft. I think the crucial two points were that they were equally likely to make the decision and the women gave it away. And also that we did a personality test on these people and we looked at dominance on the CPI, for those of you who know the California Psychological Inventory, and neither sex was more dominant than the other sex. So it wasn't personality and it wasn't decision making. It was apparently just the norm that two young people, and these were college age people, who didn't know each other, were conforming to what everybody says they're supposed to do. And it's the right, quote, thing to do. And if you stick your neck out and say, "No, you do the secretarial task," then you're doing precisely that. You're sticking your neck out and you're risking being different, being rejected. And I think one of the points I'd like to pick up on, again, that you brought out was that there is a price to assuming power. There is a cost to assuming power. It's risky. You stick your neck out. You risk failure. You risk assuming responsibility. And there's a lot of cost to power. And I think that many of us as women either because we've been socialized to say, hey, it's easier not to assume this power, it's easier to let somebody else do it, or because it's just the norm, resist power and run away from it.
We also tend to think that it has to be immoral instead of just being ambiguous and amoral. Another question that affects everybody, women, I think, most because of their socialization to carry the moral values of the culture, you know, and so on. Now,
Thank you.
Had your hand up for a good time.
This is a comment really in relationship to what people were saying about the men separating themselves out afterwards. I was recently told about a study in which once women got into a field that was felt to be solely male-oriented, male-dominated, and where the power was held by the men, and they got into that field, and there was enough women in it, the prestige of that field fell off, and the power in that field fell off. And I don't know what else. Yeah, people seem to be agreeing with it. I was appalled when I heard about it. But I think it is true. But then that becomes, you know, from that becomes a problem of how do us as women become a powerful force if one, you know, was striving and fighting to get into a certain position, all of a sudden it's the power is
I think what we're all suggesting is that this is a total situation. And I know that I began by saying within the system and starting where we are and doing what we can, that the more we talk about the practicalities of it, the more what you are saying and what other people have raised becomes clear, that we can make progress and we can change things. And at the same time, because we're contained within a total situation, the change will be affected by, in one area, will be affected by that in another situation. I mean, but they're just the same. I do not want to devalue or belittle the changes that are taking place and that are taking place. We haven't got here. Let me just give you an example from my field. 200 years ago, there were very few women writers. It was quite odd to do this. There were some, and they were beginning, but it was still difficult to make a living doing it. Well, after 200 years, we can make a living doing it, but how many of us won Pulitzer Prizes this year, for instance, and how many are taught, or were taught in the, are taught in the academic canon outside of women's studies? In other words, there are different sides and different aspects, even to a change of a growing ability of at least to live by your pen if you're female. You're still not regarded as saying what's so important that you have to be taught as part of literature, but it is better to be able to live by your pen than not. That's, I guess, what it is.
Isn't the real question how few women publishers there are, Elizabeth? I mean, there aren't very many more than there were 200 years ago.
Oh, I think male publishers will publish a woman who sells, but what she has to do is sell. However, a male editor picked up the woman's room and
oh, yeah, no, but I'm saying there should be women in that position.
Of course, there are quite a lot of women editors in publishing houses, but very few who control the money.
That's right. That's what I was getting at.
Right. Now, back here, who hasn't talked? Have you? No, you haven't. And you wanted to.
I'm the most worried about a power that nobody's mentioned today, and that's nuclear power, which was invented by men and which the men are lying about right and left. And there aren't enough women scientists to be able to read through the truth of what's going on, and it may be that all these things we're talking about are complete luxuries because in 20 or 30 years nobody will be here.
What would you see?
Well, I'd like to see women mobilize and organize and using these three precepts that you gave to stop this.
As a part of a political process?
Yes.
I'm sure they would find male allies there who would be useful whether you wanted to bond on other issues.
Haven't done any research on this, but just in talking, I have not met a woman who is in favor of going on with nuclear energy. Mm-hmm. But there are loads of men that I've talked to, and I've read both sides, but I mean, the men seem to...
This is obviously a field where we can not only undertake this task that seems so vital, but we can also do something too, which is to establish the insistence of women and feminists that what we care about are not women's issues.
We talk about powers of the weak, and I'm sitting here thinking that one of the problems in the centralized power structure is that there's a weakness in the power, which is that not many men and not many women are happy as they move up the ladder of the centralized power structure that exists. I'll just take that as a given. And I was trying to think back to what Lisa brought up originally early on in this thing, talking about the idea of I'm a studio of process and kind of a long-range view of things. It seems to me that one of the things we have to look at most closely is what kind of target we want and what kind of view we have of power. And the question also comes to mind, is there such a thing as a decentralized power? Whether it be power of generating energy for homes or power of generating changes in our lives. It seems to me one of the basic principles that the women's movement has started to be working with is the whole idea of decentralization. And that in some ways has minimized our effect in view of the majority press because we seem to be a bunch of people who disagree with each other, contradict each other. There's lots of controversy and disagreement, and that immediately means that we're not together.
That's a male definition, of
right,
course.
But that's women. We have to really work on the idea, I think, of that trick of centralization and decentralization of viewpoints, regardless of what we're talking about.
Very important point. The only time I've seen that strongly made and well made, incidentally, in any writing that was made by a man, it's made by Gene Sharp in The Politics of Nonviolent Action, when he's talking about the effect, one of the strengths of a nonviolent political group is that it tends to decentralize rather than to centralize itself, partly in response to the need to act in different locales and in different situations, but also because it essentially undercuts the idea of a forceful leader ruling by force and challenges definitions of power. I'm not stating it well, but I've recalled it to me at once. If you don't know that book, you might find it interesting. Yeah. Lisa, you haven't spoken.
I just want to comment on a number of things and a lot of ideas that came out here. Getting back to the point of process and what you raised earlier about new approaches to things. As someone who spent 3 years in a Wall Street law firm, I'm going to say that if you don't, even if you do amass numbers up to a dozen or 20, the changes on the women are much more significant than the changes on the system. You don't change the system, and the only way you manage to stay there is to adopt the values and in many ways, all of the trappings of the system, because that's what makes you successful there. It has nothing to do with being a woman. Now, it's true that you do gain some support back and forth from the other women, and you do manage to hold on to what you consider some things that are vital to your personal identity. But you manage to, I think you have to give up an enormous amount of yourself to succeed. And some women are willing to do that and will adopt the values and the trappings of the system that they're trying to work up in. But to say that it doesn't change you is...
No, I don't think it...
The impact is really enormous.
Yeah.
But I do think that women can recognize this. We can develop our own institutional approaches to problems. I just came from the National Women of the Law Conference. There were 1,500 to 2,000 women from all over the country that came together in Texas. And we've come up with enormous different kinds of strategies and ways to work together to solve problems. And we talked about publishing, I think, yes, women do have to get publishing. We have an enormous amount of power in ourselves to do these things, and we don't necessarily have to work with within the structures that exist. And that, I think, is a very significant way of exercising the power that we have.
I agree with you, and I'm sorry you've taught me not to sound too optimistic or speak too fast. I'm glad to remember that, but you are, in fact, illustrating the use of powers of the weak, disagreeing and dissenting from the way things are done, and the beginning to form groups which will confront the general disagreement with the structures, definitions, and rules, and work out strategies.
No, I guess what I'm suggesting is that the distrust and the bonding are definitely two important steps. Beyond that, there can be action outside of the structure that you're...
Certainly, there can be action anyplace, and undoubtedly there will be, and there will be the creation of new settings, which may very well be single sex in our situation, or may very well be a kind of withdrawal of blacks to a black power concept, and which I don't know enough about to do more than mention it in passing. Certainly we do know that this has taken place in women's history, and probably will again, and can be very strengthening. There are things that we desperately need to know that we can tell ourselves only when we're together. It's all.
I'm just also add there are a lot of men who are also battling their concepts of the power structure, and are very willing to cooperate and interested in developing new strategies in which we've all been.
Yes, there are different areas and different levels, I think, at which both of those things can take place. But they work best when they work together, that's all. Now, let me see.
It's how they work together that's the crucial issue here. Yes, you talk about polarization, that we need to move toward the middle. I agree, but it's at what point we move toward the middle that's crucial. I'd like to use women's studies as an example,
yep,
because I do teach women's studies, and I feel that the strength women have, academics have shown in planning women's studies, is a good model for us, because that's where new forms of leadership were exercised and practiced. I think practice is essential here, because if we move toward that center before we've practiced, we're going to be in trouble. We're going to be co-opted again, and that's my concern. In the university, we still remain apart. We remain apart as programs, some of us as departments, and we don't want to move too quickly toward that middle, because I think we're going to get lost again. And our strength has been in being separate. However, I don't suggest that as a permanent position. It's just not to move toward the center too quickly, and not to be too optimistic, or to be maybe unrealistic, or not to see the illusions within some of this, what you say is progress. There are illusions in that progress that we really have to look at. And but there's certainly hope. I think we have all sorts of new models that we've created that we can use and that are powerful, especially since most of the majority of the female student population in the 1980s in the university will be women.
Yes. I'd like to point out that the concept of bonding is certainly not confined to the weak. That has been a very powerful feature of the male power structure as long as history has been operative. So to say that how many women were there in Texas is a bonding with powerless, I think, is really a polarization which is a disservice to everybody. And what troubles me about a lot of the conversation I've heard is that something that's really a function of time and space, that is whether we be separate or be together, and is not an absolute, becomes a kind of excuse for polarization again, which is a feature of the old system. Now, I think at this point in our lives, wherever we are, throughout the universe, the female principle has been brought into play as part of the cosmic evolution of the planet, because the male principle based on Newtonian mechanics and the separation of subject and object and totally, supposedly, objective relationships and the this tiny, the limited parameters of science have led us to a mindless technology, which is like Frankenstein and is on the verge of devouring us. So it was only through the introduction of the female principle, which is concern for process, concern for the life force, concern for values. And this is something that men are aware of too, although we're all in different stages, and some men in some places are not, just as some women in some places are not aware of female elements. But as a general evolutionary process, this is going on, and we need only join the parade. And I think we have to be very clear that it doesn't mean that we always have to decide, well, are we feminists or are we scholars? It's no longer either or, but both and. And we have to recognize that we can draw on the strengths that are now available to us in various parts of the world. We are now on spaceship Earth, it's very clear. Everything we do everywhere affects us. But our conception of what the future is will change the future. So in that sense, Lisa was right when she says we have to look ahead because your very intentionality defines what you discover.
Yes, but so.
And I just want to mention one more thing. Yes. I have a friend in Washington who is the Assistant Secretary of Commerce. Her name is Elsa Porter. And she is the only woman who has ever had charge of the budget. Now that's hardline stuff. You know, $9 billion, 39,000 employees. And she has totally turned around the whole concept of that department about what they're doing, that government is for the people in it and not the reverse. Now, it sounds like a very simple thing, but she's dealing with, all right, maybe it doesn't. What it does in practice, I mean to say it sounds like a simplistic, but what she has done is instituted human growth seminars, which would sound like really
she has a military budget.
Well, she can deal with her area. She's dealing with human growth seminars, and the whole concept is not the hierarchical triangle where the leader or the ruler is at the top and everybody else is on varying degrees of varying parts of the scale down below, but she is a facilitator at the center. The facilitator is at the center, and the other people have access to the entire process, and their place in it is respected, and everybody's input is respected, and you don't have to be at a certain point in order to be validated, which is also important. The old business of, do you have to be successful in man's terms? Do you have to be successful in the old terms? Well, you don't have to be anything anymore if you can still have a structure which will allow everybody to have an input which can make the kind of organic change which will save us from blowing ourselves up.
I mean, that still sounds utopian.
But let me tell you, I'm more concerned.
But let's accept it. I'm still concerned about how we affect this.
You're absolutely right. Only I'm saying there are little sparks of hope here and there. And the State Department is so impressed by the results that she has achieved that they are sending people around to find out how she does it. So I don't think we should feel that we're a beleaguered minority who have no support anywhere. I believe that as Audre Lorde says, we have to explore our dreams and then go out and find everybody else who's dreaming the same.
Yes.
Well, I think what you're talking about is influence, not power. And if she, as I said to you just now, she could cut the military budget, but she could really make a difference in our lives. I have found from a study of history that all of this is available to everybody, that no class has ever given up power without a struggle. And I think we were very optimistic about what happened in Iran. It seemed like people, powerless people, could take power, but it ends up with a kind of a bloodbath because they have to destroy the class that they just put out. Now, it is true that the weak do have powers and that everything that we're doing is to strengthen our consciousness. But in the end, what is it? Do we take power? Do we share power? Nobody gives it away. And how do you get it? I think that the reason that women can get up in the corporation and that there's a certain amount of democracy in America is because the class in power is a very strong class with very firm power, and it can share to a very large extent. But when you get close to taking it away, your friend's seminar is not going to help. Now, I don't say, this as a pessimist.
It's not a question of a seminar. But what I'm saying is we have to link up with all the other people who also want, for their own reasons, yes, Exactly, including males and all the minorities.
I said it's not to be pessimistic, but to understand the difference between influence and power. When you talk about women writers, we have women writers, but they have not had the power to influence thought and movement. They have, as you know, and Douglas said, have really sentimentalized in many instances and been an aid to the party in power, the class in power, and the sex in power.
Somehow actually done things to change. First you change perception, and then you change the way people apply those perceptions in daily life. I would say that Rachel Carson has had a great deal to do with changing perceptions of how we ought to deal with the physical environment, and who would agree, Jane Jenkins has had an effective influence on how we think about urban problems.
She was ignored for years, Rachel Carson.
Rachel Carson's book came out,
and she was ignored for years.
Well, but she was, you know. The New Yorker ran the whole damn thing, and it was picked up and discussed.
Wasn't she dead?
And perceived, and then you began to have the beginning of the problem. Nothing's going to happen overnight. I'm her love for it.
Only has a very limited readership.
But it has influential people, if you want to use those words, as among its readers. It can make more of an impact.
If we want to reach, then that comes back to Kathy's question of who's the target of who you want to reach.
I agree with you, but I think there may be a number of targets whom you want to reach, depending on different situations. I don't think we have to say that there is only one target, or only one goal, or only one ideology. In fact, I think we begin to lock ourselves into inflexible positions if we think too much.
I don't see anything wrong with polarization. It's part of the dialectical process. You know, I don't see anything wrong with conflict. If we're trying to create a politic of power that doesn't have conflict in it, we're crazy. Because conflict exists in life, it exists in experience. I mean, we can't go through this whole thing of being nice to one another, because the world isn't nice that we live in. We're not nice as people all the time, and we're in conflict internally, the world's in conflict externally, and I think we have to build that into our power system.
And power involves conflict of interest. That's what power is all about.
It's a process of negotiation between different people with different ideas and different values. Of course you have conflict.
It seems to be.
There's no way to get around it. But there are ways in which you have what was being said this morning about things that cut across. You have a difference between conflict and polarization. Polarization carries it to extremes, can become lethal, can knock out any sense of humankind as an existing, we hope, continuing area which contains all of us. I do not turn away from the idea of conflict at all, but I do not think it is the only way in which decisions can be made, nor do I think that it fits every situation in which a decision is going to be made.
It's just very troubling to me, first of all, to diffuse polarization or to diffuse the intensity of conflict. That's what energizes a weak, to become stronger and to unbind themselves. They are bound terribly. We're bound by socialization. We're scared to death. We hide behind all of the things we've been doing. And we've carried it. We walked under the banner of the living.
Well, let me suggest that my first power of the week, distrust and dissidence, sets up immediately a situation in which we exert within our heads, at least, and then we move on, a sense of conflict with the structure.
Yes, but let me say things on that. The men don't have to fight for era. I'm embarrassed that I have to ask for independence that was declared so many years ago and will give to us. It's going to take another 1,000 years and we'll wait very politely. And we'll have the church fight us and the military fight us and everything else. Now, I'm also embarrassed that I cannot be free to use my body as I wish, whether it be expressively or with reference to reproduction or anything else. The men have no effect. And who are resisting is sure the women are in too, for very definite other reasons.
Well, I'm sure you're not alone.
This to me is so basic when my freedom of mind and options and my freedom that I've been promised to the Constitution and my freedom of the body, which I've been promised when I was made, I suppose, isn't there. But the man has a perfect grip on it. So that when Lee Morgan gets out of his crazy thing, he gets out and he says, people asked him yesterday, I saw on TV, well, how'd you go? And he said, well, I would say I was thrilled, but that's a feminine thing. So I should say I'm an excited. So men are always excited in action and so forth. And we just said we're thrilled somewhere in fantasy.
You are not alone in dealing with your situation and being upset about it.
And I think we have to address them, not with violence, but with interest and passion.
I just wanted to say, just getting off a little bit from your subject, but say that it seems to me that power means as a term, whether it's male, female, feminine, non-feminine, is not that much, doesn't interest me that much. Power, it seems to me, is the capacity to get people to make decisions concurrent with your own interests. Number one. Number two, I think it's very important to distinguish between power and authority. They result distinctions. You know, that there's a legitimate institutionalized structure which may or may not have power, but power might also exist outside of the institutional structure. And so you've got a basic dichotomy between culture, ideology on the one hand, and your structural reality, which is action, behavior, and whatever, on the other hand. And there's a confusion here, I'm hearing, anyway, between power, authority, legitimate, non-legitimate. And when I talk about power, I talk almost exclusively about something that's illegitimate until it moves into a central position in a society when it becomes legitimized by meeting the people's interest.
Aren't you saying that we are, in fact, in process of redefining these terms, which is something that we have to do?
Right, which is so important about separatism.
Seems to me we do by activity and redefining as we go through process.
But illegitimate activity, it has to be, because if it were part of the institutional structure, we would be buying into the system and controlling
it. I think you can do illegitimate things perfectly well within the structure and make...
But how many decisions can you get concurrent with your own interests by doing that?
I don't know, but I think I don't in my own mind want to polarize within the structure or revolution against, because I think the activity can be either or both and turn out to have an unintended larger effect than was thought at the time. And I also think that there are many revolutions, perhaps the biggest ones, which take place almost without our knowing it, which are based more on active intervention than on being thoroughly thought out ahead of time. So I'm just trying to keep it open, really, not to cut you back or debate.
I think they're very important distinctions, because we play around with the term power and we almost always confuse it with the authority, the structure, the government, and that's not really where power is at.
I've been doing it the right way or not, thinking about ourselves as possible participants and how to go about doing that. Yeah, how much time do we have, Hester, or can we just roll along for a while?
I guess we can go a couple of, depends what people want to do. Parties at 4:30, but we get there at 25 of.
So let's get there at 25 of and have what? One more sort of central comment question? Would that be all right? Come ahead. You haven't said anything.
All right. I'm concerned because we've been talking about the powerful and those who want power.